Welcome to Sonic Lit, spoken web radio show. I'm Jason Camelot. I'm here with
Catherine McLeod.
And today we have a special pre-recorded show for you that is based on a conference that Catherine and I went to in Vienna this past summer. The full title was Poetry Off the Page, Around the Globe, Advances in Poetry Performance Research. And the conference was held at Literaturhaus Vienne, that's Vienna in German, as well as at the University of Vienna in the Department of English and American Studies. It was a two-day conference, and it was really focused on poetry off the page, but especially spoken word and slam and kinds of poetry that we don't always attend to ourselves, Catherine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's interesting reflecting back on it now in December because this conference took place in June. But, you know, it was December last year that we were sending in the proposal for it. And, you know, it really was quite a highlight, I would say, of the year of like going to Vienna, going to this conference, and getting to listen to researchers and poets, really from, as it, the title said, around the globe, and to hear some of their performances, and to hear the performances that their papers were about. And I think it's interesting thinking about it on this show because we have played a lot of sound. We've played a lot of sound poetry, and we've also played a lot of more traditional poetry and talked about differences between those two. And slam poetry is sort of, I don't know, kind of in the middle, but also like often a form of poetry that doesn't make it, say, onto a poetry album or a recording because it is so much about the live performance. And many of the papers were trying to think through methods for studying live performance, such as slam poetry. You know, today we are going to hear some recordings, but they are often recordings that were made in performances, and sort of you'll often hear audience applause and things afterwards. And some of the recordings will actually be, you know, whether it's YouTube, Instagram, different ways in which those recordings are disseminated and shared around the world. So I'm looking forward to what we have in store. We're going to be hearing some voices of poets and researchers that we met at that conference.
Yeah, and let me just paint a little bit of a picture of what this conference program looked like, because it was really a mixture of academic papers or talks about poetry and performance, as well as performances. We had those in most evenings. You know, on the first day, and also it was a very international conference. So we had scholars from across Germany, from Bath Spa University, so the UK, New Zealand. Liz Breslin gave a talk called Performing Bodies for Funding Bodies, a Performance Review. But Liz Breslin is also one of the performers that we interviewed at the conference with the idea that we would play some of Liz's performances on the radio show. Lucy English, you know, from Bath Spa, gave a talk. We had presenters from Belgium, all across Germany, as I've said. And then on the first night, I missed a lot of the first day, but I was lucky enough to attend the keynote, the first keynote event on day one, which was at Literaturhaus. And that was Shantanu Anand from India, delivering a kind of talk and performance called Spoken Word Poetry in India, Witnessing the Rise, One Word at a Time. And it really was a kind of plenary lecture, but also a bit of a performance. And I was blown away by Anand's talk because it made me realize how popular spoken word poetry was in India, and that they would get literally thousands of people attending these readings. You know, we give a poetry reading and maybe three people will show up, six maybe. So the idea of what this movement was in India, how participatory it was, like the fans were involved, were cheering, were you know, chanting, et cetera, back in between performances. That was quite amazing. And then, yeah, so New Zealand, India, you know, really a very international conference. The second day had some talks by scholars from the United States and some talks that were sort of on more, I guess, recognizable materials to us, you know, poetry recordings of page-based poets. But then, you know, also talks on things that I'd never heard of, like Kara Oh from Oxford University gave a talk called Lost for Words, No More, Contemporary Spoken Word as Method for Creole Language Revitalization. And Kara allowed us also to interview them about their work and sent us some of their poetry performance, which is really work that's part of their research on revitalizing the Creole language and integrating that traditional pieces into their English language performance poetry that they're doing.
Well, we're going to be listening to many of these participants in the conference and some clips from interviews with them. But why don't we start with actually hearing Kara perform some of that poetry that you were just talking about, Jason?
Okay, sounds good. This is Kara Oh.
Forgive me. I've never once been so cruel to speak a language I do not understand. Meaning must escape me like ire bubbled from blue lips. I apologize for my fluency. At 7, I gave my week's worth of pocket money to the Red Cross every time they asked, do it? They said, do it. And there struggled my desire, dropped deep and down into darkness, yelling inane wants. Metallically, I have drowned them all in the dark lake, 50 cents every time. To be virtuous in my language is to not speak at all. Leave it to English. Jakapan Jorang Lion, as in opposite of truth-telling. The capping of ball desire, stunting the way we speak. Even Mama betrays herself from time to time. At 23, I heard her gasp like undo, and between tap caught on the upper architrave and I, who was the ghost and who was the preposition discontinued. Undo perpetuity, I drop my H's, watch them plink into blackness as shiny offerings for my sins. Some pay whole lives and for their piety find the whole tongue cut out. We say Lida Bendek to mean the point of death, and do grand uncles have gone with hollows for mouths? How life recedes from us when we do not speak. How it retreats as the shortening of the tongue, the final plunge of the coin, the tinny death rattle located at the base of a can, a lake, a throat. No wonder I can't say it another way. No wonder I can't fear what stumbles out. No wonder that even if I want nothing but Greg Mulo, if you wait, don't air, like breath, like life, like language, consider what is Baba but the gurgle and choke, the gully choke of all that's dying to be said.
So that was Kara Oh performing a multilingual poem called Gwa Adamo Nabsu. I hope I pronounced that correctly. And we had the opportunity to talk to Kara about her work. This was just after we witnessed her deliver this incredible paper about this sort of language revitalization performance work that she was doing. So let's hear from that conversation, which you know, it was so long ago, I don't even remember what it is that we talked about. So let's hear that now.
So let's begin. Just can you introduce yourself?
Hi, my name's Kara. My pronouns are they, them. I'm currently finishing up my master's program at Oxford. I do world literatures in English. I'm also a experimental poet, and I've been teaching for 5 years. Oh, yeah.
Wow. And can you tell us a little bit more about the research that you presented on here at the Vienna conference?
Yeah, so my talk was about, it's called Lost for Words, No More. It's about spoken word as method for Creole language revitalization. It's based off some performances that I did back home in Singapore and my thoughts around how to revitalize our endangered mother tongues.
Great. Let's turn this way because that way I won't pick up their voices. You stand here. Yeah. You mentioned some other performers who you admire or who you may know personally. Could you just name some of them as well? Because we might actually look them up and actually play some of them as well.
Yeah, so Singapore's spoken word community is really tight and small, and I know them personally and also really love their work. That's why I brought them up there. So Arundhita, she's a very international and very well-known, wonderful, solid body of work. Steph Dogfoot as well, wonderful stage presence. Iri Aman, known in the open mic circles in Singapore for innovative use of visuals. And Christopher Quack, who is new and upcoming. There's so many others as well, so if you want more, I can just like let you know more.
That's great. So maybe tell us a little bit about, so imagine we are going to be playing some pieces of you performing your work. If you have particular pieces in mind, could you set those up for us? Like tell us the title and maybe what you would want listeners to hear before they actually listen to that piece.
Right. So I have two pieces in mind. One might be more portable in an international context as opposed to the other. So the first one that I'm thinking of is called The Trial. It was performed at the Grand Poetry Tournament in 2023. It's a group piece that was done by me and Jennifer Ann Champion, whom I love, Mariam Haider, also whom I love, and it was a group piece. It's about gender-based violence around the world, and it's interesting because this was the first time we experimented with overlapping languages and voices to create a polyphonic kind of effect, a haunting type of effect. So the second piece is called Goa Aramu Napsu, and it is a piece that I've done in my mother tongue to kind of explore the difficulties and confusions that I have when speaking because of the three languages that occupy my mind. So it's best understood with the visuals that come alongside it to understand the eye rhymes and the puns that allow for these slippages and meanings across the three languages. It's also accompanied by soundscapes to help with the emotive aspect of things where languages fail. So those are the two. Yeah.
Can you say a word or two? I know you just gave a whole paper on this topic, but a word or two about some of the more traditional forms of performance that have influenced you to some extent.
Yeah, so in my community, I come from the Baba community in Singapore. It's a mixed heritage Creole community. And one of our cultural heritage practices is called Dondang Sayang. And it was innovated in Malaccan courts in the 14th and 15th century. It's known as an indigenous Malay practice, but in Singapore, my community is the one that has been preserving it and keeping it alive, where two participants or more exchange poems to one another in a test of their wits and to test their idiomatic knowledge as well. It's very similar to a rap cipher accompanied by music. So that's, yeah, Dondang Sayang.
Awesome. And the last question I'll ask, because this was really fascinating about the talk that you gave, was sort of the importance or I think an argument that you were continuing to develop about the importance of integrating for the purposes of language reclamation, right, sort of or revival of using art and art practice as a very important way of making it happen, of motivating others to be engaged in it and to bring the language back to life in a way. So if you could say a word or two about that. question.
Yeah, so if people are interested in learning about language revitalization efforts, there are many efforts around the world. And so one, so in Singapore, we have two main leaders doing that. So in terms of, I forgot the question actually.
Oh, just, yeah, why poetry or art is important, an important component of language revitalization.
I see. Yeah. So the main thing is to raise the profile of the language, because for a lot of endangered languages, especially Creole languages, we suffer from bad press because of, you know, cultural, social, economic pressures that push us to be otherwise. So by using art and poetry, it helps to elevate and raise the profile of it and to help people understand the experimental aspects that can be done with our existing level of knowledge. It doesn't need to be a complete level of knowledge for it to be good art. It can just be creative. So, yeah.
So next up is writer, editor, and performer Dr. Liz Breslin. They're a performer of Polish, Irish, and English descent, and they now live in and this, again, because this is such an international conference, it's hard to pronounce some of the names, but let me give it a shot. Etopoli Dunedin in Aotearoa, New Zealand. And Liz has some poetry collections, including Show You're Working Out, Dead Bird Books, 2025, In Bed with the Feminists, also published by Dead Bird Books in 2021. And Liz won the Kathleen Grattan Prize for a sequence of poems in 2020. And Alzheimer's and a Spoon is another one of their books from Otago University Press in 2017. So Liz was a very dynamic person that we met at the conference. I was sitting right behind them. And so while we were listening to other papers, and then we just struck up a conversation, and I really learned how important sort of poetry community and how important sort of social uses of poetry are for Liz's art practice.
Mm-hmm. I also just found that, you know, from the start of the conference, Liz was on one of, I think it was the first, yeah, the first panel, and their paper was talking about funding structures for poetry in the context of New Zealand. And there were so many comparisons to a Canadian context, thinking about, you know, the settler colonial context that Canada also shares, and also just the ways in which poetry is funded and the sort of funding bodies for it. And something that came up in their paper that I actually asked a question afterwards was the use of the term long form spoken word shows. And it was something, you know, I was sitting next to Clara Duplessis, a poet and researcher who was also presenting at the conference. And her and I both sort of perked up with the minute Liz said long form poetry performance, because we've both been thinking about that a lot and sort of thinking about how can poetry readings actually become a, you know, a longer performance. And so it was interesting to hear Liz sort of talk about the ways in which sympathize with that from Canada. So we had a big chat about it afterwards, and then got to hear Liz later that same night perform in the poetry reading. And yeah, definitely a very memorable person to have met. And, you know, I follow them now on Instagram and, you know, following their work from across the globe.
Yeah, so I feel like we should maybe just listen to Liz talk a little bit about their work.
Yeah.
Then we can actually play some of their performance itself.
Great.
So here's some clips from an interview with Liz Breslin. This was at the University of Vienna this past summer.
Hi.
I'm Jason Camelot. It's really nice to meet you here in Vienna.
It's great to meet you as well, Jason. Yeah. I'm Liz Breslin.
Liz Breslin.
That's, and I heard Liz Breslin perform 5 poems last night in a poetry reading held here at the Poetry Off the Page conference. Liz, can you tell us a little bit about yourself to start with?
I am a poet. I guess I'm a stage and page poet. There's been lots of discussions about that this week. I have just passed my PhD. And I make a lot of zines. I do a lot of talking. Yeah, that's pretty much me.
Yeah. What was your PhD passed in?
It's a creative critical PhD, long title, which I can sometimes remember, which is Show You're Working Out, a queer exploration of Pākehā stories of gender, space and violence in the rural south of Te Waipounamu, the South Island of Aotearoa, New Zealand. But it's basically about how colonization makes us tell these sort of like smaller stories over and over and over, and like looking at different ways of breaking out of those stories.
So some of those interests, and they're more than interests, like they're passions, it sounded emerged in some of the pieces that you read last night. Could you tell us a little bit about how your critical interests, your research interests intersect with your creative practice?
See, I think it's funny because in the talk I did earlier on in the day, which was... the title of it was Performing Bodies for Funding Bodies, a Performance Review. But in that, I talked about how we do kind of like falsely keep the creative and the critical apart. And so it's kind of a trick question to ask me, like, what my creative and my critical practice do, because they like blur into one. And Jack Halberstam talked about it first, about like the queer step scavenging approach, but Stacey Waite talks about it as well, like you know, this weird binary about, are we man, are we woman, are we poet, are we scholar, are we, like, what are we doing here? And I'm kind of a mash it all together and see what happens person, but mash it all together and put some like really interesting experimental poetic constraints on it. Yeah, that's kind of what I do with my poems.
Awesome. Can you tell us a little bit about some of the pieces we might listen to on this show?
Sure. So I guess one of them would be A Man Walks Into a Bar. That was the poem that I opened with. And it's great because a lot of people have told me that felt hard-hitting for them. And that I love that because it feels hard-hitting for me to stand there and say that poem, you know, to like have it coming out of my body. Like, and what I was trying to do was capture how that experience had felt at the time, but then, you know, how we do with a poem, then we make it into something like differently dimensional. So, yeah, I was so happy that people felt that, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. Excellent. Any other pieces that may be publicly available that you want to preface or set up in any way?
So we had some really interesting conversations. There's just a really short throwaway one. Well, it's not a throwaway one, actually. It's deeply important, but one, not the Mary Oliver take you came here for, which in its entirety goes, you do not have to be good, but I do. I have to be better, and then everything will be okay. And that does maybe sound like a throwaway poem, but actually in New Zealand, there's this kind of deep vein of people doing very serious, very sincere, but very funny referential poems to as regards Mary Oliver. Like, I think about Hera Lindsay Bird's done that, and also Rebecca Hawkes has done a great one. And, yeah, I don't know, it's part of a really good queer conversation, I guess.
That's awesome. So our audience isn't necessarily a poetry or literary audience. So would you explain who Mary Oliver is?
Oh, so yeah, for sure. So Mary Oliver is fantastic. So she's fantastic because, well, I mean, she's still fantastic even though she's dead now, but right-wing Christians love to have her at their wedding because they think she's a nature poet, and queer poets and just people in general, I guess, love her because all, like, she has this understanding of nature as deeply queer and deeply connected and Yeah, she's just an extraordinary writer. Like, even if people aren't into poetry, I think she's one of those poets that, people love.
And didn't Mary Oliver also write sort of a guidebook to writing poetry? Did she write about how to write poetry?
I don't know if she did. I haven't come across it, but I feel like the poem that I reference in that first line is a poem called, I think I'm right about this, but it's a poem called Wild Geese, and the first line of that is, you do not have to be good. Mm. And it's the most extraordinary poem, and that poem in itself is kind of a guide of how to, not just for poetry, but for life, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. So as we listen to you perform, this is going to be a weird question, but imagine yourself watching yourself perform.
Yeah.
Could you describe to our listening audience what that might look like as we listen to you?
Well, they're going to see a white person with some version of shaved and lengthy hair and glasses that they keep pushing up their nose, with kind of shaking limbs because they're always kind of nervous and energized at the same time while performing, usually bare feet, and so serious and so joyful at the same time. I hope that's what they're going to say.
That's what I saw last night.
What a great question, Jason. Thank you.
Well, thanks so much. Anything else you'd want to say before we listen to you?
No, just thank you. I love being in community with other people making words. It's my favorite thing.
Awesome. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
So that was Liz Breslin talking about their critical work as well as their performance work. And I'm glad that I thought to ask Liz what it is we'd be seeing while listening to them perform, because that was a compelling part, actually, of all of the performances that we saw in Vienna, because a lot of this was coming from performance poetry, slam poetry, spoken word poetry traditions. There was a lot of gesture, and the physical presence of the performance was a very important element of the verbal performances that we heard.
Yeah, and it's harder to convey that over radio. So I'm really glad you asked Liz that question too.
Yeah, well, let's listen to Liz in performance now.
I'm Liz Breslin. This is a poem from my new collection, Show You're Working Out. It's after Tom Stoppard and Tisiata Avia. It's for H. Jekyll Kelly, and it's called Pilates Could Happen to Anyone. 1. HJ has her abs on 2.5 springs, and I have my phone on record in the black box under my reformer because I'm going to write a poem about Pilates. I'm going to juxtapose the instructions we're given with the text from the stories on my Instagram feed, and I'm going to make a political point about the interconnectedness of wellness and white supremacy. Lines like 2. If you like to work hard, choose the springs at the high end of the suggested settings. And if you need to, you can reduce them halfway through the exercise. Please remember, you should never feel any pain. If you do, stop straight away while talks of ceasefire remain inconclusive. Israel is invading Rafah. Offering, hug a tree. Here's what you need to know. Bomb kills at least 12 people, including children, at 2 displacement camps in eastern Congo. Grit happens. It's Hell Week. 3 hours from Auckland. Discover New Caledonia. Back on the menu, Queen Olives, T-zone tight, all eyes on Rafah. The people of Gaza cannot wait. They have nowhere else to go. Hug the moon, the weather is grim, but we'll still do poetry. Lick your toe and wave it around a bit. Goodbye to dopamine addiction with micro-learning. Get the T-shirt. Springs. Women. 1 to 1.5. Men. 1.5 to 2. 3. Over soy flat whites, we agree. We busy our bodies to shush our minds. Our momentum has taken over. We Google Kathleen Stamford Grant. We discuss our complex apocalypse composting systems for entitled white men and their nice white lady friends, because compost is better for the planet than setting them on fire in a big bin and sitting on the lid smoking. We've put a lot of thought into this, how we'd watch them break down under a sprinkling of Tina Rangatiratanga equity and drag queen story times. But this is a long-term
time project, and in the meantime we consider who we'd smash first with our plough-refined guns. And the answer's always the patriarchy. We say it, rolling our eyes in our heads on our bodies that we're wresting from their control. We say it like it's a joke. 4. Lying on your back on the reformer with your feet on the footbar, take the hand straps and take the arms straight up to the ceiling. Tabletop position, imprinted spine to make it easier, make your teardrops smaller. T-zone tight, exhale now, reverse your teardrops direction. Change the way the world works out. Pull the ribs to the hips, inhale, keep going, returning back down, curl up, exhale. 5. I cannot write a poem about Pilates. 6. Though I've been writing this one in the shower where I usually write my PhD, and in bed at night where I'm supposed to be doing sleep, and behind my eyes where the tears live. Last week I got to hang with both my grown-up children, and we walked safe down a safe street. My counselor thinks it's a good idea to give the news a break.
Okay, the next person we're going to turn to was the very first person that I met when I arrived a little bit late to the Vienna conference on the first day. Catherine had already been there since the morning, as had Clara Duplessis.
Yes, yeah.
And that person is Christian Ortega, who was just a lovely, welcoming presence as I first arrived, and who seemed noticeable to me because they were very engaged in talking to, well, people I knew there, right? Catherine, I think you were talking to Chris, or was that not the case? Maybe I just felt comfortable approaching Chris and asking some questions.
I actually remember that Chris was nodding along during one of the very first talks, and I just thought, I like this person.
I introduced myself to Christian and just asked some questions like, who are you? And Christian introduced themselves as someone who was a spoken word artist, who worked a lot on themes of queer community, and was very active in the German spoken word scene. And I was like, oh, the German spoken word scene, the German slam scene. I mean, that was all new to me. I didn't know anything about the German slam scene. So I learned a little bit about those communities, and Christian has been very active in organizing slam in different cities across Germany.
Mm-hmm. Since the conference, I've been following Chris, Chris_Ortega_slam on Instagram, and getting sort of a glimpse into the German slam scene. Chris is very involved in the community there. So, the posts since then have kept me connected to that. They've also, added a few comments on my Where Poets Read post. So I feel like it's been a nice connection back to Montreal too. So we recorded.
Yeah, I did a little mini interview with Chris, and maybe we can get a taste of what I encountered in my first conversation with Chris when I first arrived at the conference. And then we can turn to Chris in performance, in action.
That sounds great.
So hi, this is Jason Camlett. I'm here at the Poetry Off the Page conference in Vienna, at the University of Vienna. I'm here with Catherine McLeod.
Hi, Jason. I'm here with you, and the sounds of the room are all around us.
Yes, and we're going to be doing some interviews with different performers who are here at the conference. And the first person is...
Hi, I'm Chris.
Chris, where are you from, Chris?
I'm from Nuremberg in Germany, so visiting Vienna for this conference.
Wonderful. And are you a spoken word performer as well as a scholar?
Yeah, I'm a slam poet, actually, for 10 years now, performing in the whole German-speaking region. Yeah, so I'm enjoying being both today, like scholar and also poet.
Wonderful. So Christian Ortega is the full name of the person I'm speaking to. Can you tell us a little bit about your spoken word practice? Because we're going to be listening to some of those tracks in a minute.
Well, I'm passionate about poetry slams, so I'm mostly performing at poetry slams. And my focus is mainly creating narratives about diversity. So I have poems about being trans, being disabled, also having migrant perspectives and like connecting them in intersectionality, just creating some narratives that are, not that often represented in the spoken word scene, at least in Germany. So, yeah, that's what I'm doing. I'm also an activist there, creating also shows, creating stages for other poets to perform their stories.
Thanks so much, Chris. We look forward to listening to you on Sonic Lit, a spoken web radio show.
Any last words, Catherine?
Just that I also really enjoyed Chris's questions throughout the panel. So your performance as scholar, it caught my attention. So I'm excited to hear your creative work now.
Yeah, so I think just listening to Chris speak again has brought smiles to both of our faces. You get the sense of just what a kind, amazing person Chris is.
Yeah, and I had forgotten that was the first interview we had done too. I think we could hear how excited we were about getting to interview folks at the conference. You could hear it in our voices, and yeah, we were smiling while listening to that.
Well, I guess we should say, I mean, what we prepared for the conference was
was
a long sound work about listening to spoken word performance on the radio. So it was really a kind of audio piece that we made for the conference about having Sonic Lit, a spoken web radio show. And so I think while we were there, or maybe just before, I said, like, wait, why don't we interview some people at the conference and we'll do a radio show on the conference after the fact. And so I think you're hearing a little bit of the excitement of us just having had that idea and starting to do some interviews.
Exactly. Yeah, no, definitely that. And that idea, being connected to the fact that we were also at the there because of the radio show and sort of. But no, definitely you could hear that there. And we were like, oh, we think we just recorded it with a phone, not even a Zoom mic.
It was just on my iPhone.
So really, I think we probably did just have the idea right then. Thank you to Chris for talking with us and starting it off, because it was nice to see that people were very enthusiastic to talk with us as well and know that not only the interview, but also a bit of their work would get played on CGLO, on Sonic Lit at some point after the conference. So I'm glad we're bringing it full circle.
Here's Chris Ortega.
Chris Ortega! Das ist ein Text für alle, die mit mehreren Sprachen aufgewachsen sind. Und die dazwischen ihre eigene Geschichte suchen. Das ist ein Text für uns, die Worte wie queer, trans und migrantisch für sich nutzen. Das ist ein Stück meiner Geschichte, die ich jetzt mit euch teile. Kolumbianisch zu sein bedeutet, zwei Sprachen zu sprechen. Ich habe sie seit der Geburt gelernt. Deutsch zu sein bedeutet, Worte aus verschiedenen Welten zu jonglieren, damit sie in Schulhefte, Bewerbungen und an die Aufschnitttheke von Edeka passen. Queer zu sein bedeutet, eigene Geschichten zu schreiben, weil die Märchen unserer Zeit keine Rolle für uns übrig hatten. Trans und migrantisch zu sein bedeutet, zwischen den Geschichten wählen zu müssen. Geschichten, in denen wir selber sprechen und denen, in denen nur über uns erzählt wird. Doch gerade in diesem Moment fehlen mir Worte. Wie lange ist es her, dass ich in dieser Sprache gesprochen habe? In mir ist etwas aufgegangen. Dankbarkeit stolpert über den Boden, während du deine Hände in meine legst und wir uns im Takt bewegen. Mit mir bewegt sich ein ganzes Leben. Mit mir tanzt ein Baby in den Armen seines Vaters, gedrückt an das schweißnasse Hemd, mit dem Geruch von Aftershave ganz nah an der Brust und müde von dieser Welt. Die bunten Lichter, die tanzenden Schultern, die spanischen Stimmen bedeuten Sicherheit. Und die Salsa, die ist Impuls vererbt. Mit mir tanzt ein Kleinkind. Auf den Schuhen vor und zurück im Merengue, die Hände sicher geführt, denn tanzen lernen, das ist wichtiger als laufen. Mit mir tanzt ein 8-jähriges Kind. Alleine, auf der Bühne, die Rüschen der Tracht rascheln zu Kumbia, die Hüften schwingen von selbst, die Haare sind dunkel und lang, zu zwei Zöpfen geflochten, Blumen schmücken die Enden. Die Muster, die Farben, Musik sind kolumbianisch. Ein Stück migrantische Identität zur Schau vor der Grundschulklasse. Der Vater, die Familie, daneben im Rhythmus stolz. Kolumbianisch zu sein bedeutet, zwei Sprachen zu sprechen. Spanisch können wir nie so gut. Aber die zweite Sprache, die wir sprechen, die Sprache der Musik, war meine. Ich konnte tanzen. Ich konnte mit meinem Vater tanzen, während er mich über die Pflaster der Feste auf Straßen und Feiern in Zimmern und Bühnen geführt hat. Und so flogen wir über die Tanzfläche. Am besten bei Salsas, die schnellsten, die gehen, und meine Haare schwebten, wenn er mich in eine Drehung schickte und wir Worte in unserer Sprache sprachen. Unser Moment. Verbindung. Viele Jahre ist das her. Meine kurzen Haare fallen mir verschwitzt ins Gesicht, während du meine Hände drückst und ich zittere. Ich zittere, weil mein Puls sich an längst vergangene Rhythmen erinnert. Mit meinen langen Haaren habe ich einen Teil von mir abgegeben. Trans und kolumbianisch zu sein, habe ich nie gelernt. Meine kolumbianische Identität wurde mir tanzend eingeschrieben. Wie man ohne wehenden Rock mit Hand an der Taille statt an der Schulter migrantisch ist, weiß ich nicht. Trans und migrantisch zu sein bedeutet manchmal zwischen den Geschichten wählen zu müssen. Und mit der neuen Geschichte meines Körpers, die ich für mich gewählt habe, mit meinem neuen Namen und Worten in meiner eigenen Stimme, habe ich etwas verloren. Die Bewegung meiner Hüften, die Leichtigkeit meiner Füße, das Lächeln zur Musik, meine Sprache. Kolumbianisch zu sein bedeutet, zwei Sprachen zu sprechen. Ich habe sie seit der Geburt gelernt. Ich musste mich entscheiden zwischen dem Verlieren meiner migrantischen Wurzeln und dem Verlieren meines Selbst. Jetzt stehst du hier und zeigst mir Schritt für Schritt meine Worte. Du gibst mir Zeit, sie zu finden. Und während in mir alles bebt, heilt dort etwas Kleines und bekommt den Raum, mit steifen Stimmbändern erneut zu sprechen. Die Worte finden noch nicht so ganz ihren Platz. Sie sind leise, aber du hörst zu. Und mit unsicheren Schritten gibt die Trauer über verlorene Teile Platz für Neues, zu sprechen in meinen Worten, für Geschichten, die noch zu schreiben sind.
I think we're going to end the show with one more person that we met at the conference. And this was a plenary speaker. It was very funny. Shantanu Anand was the keynote speaker on the first evening of the conference, but really was very uncomfortable with holding that sort of position of being the plenary speaker. Was very self-deprecating as someone who really just wanted to be one among the many fascinating people who were attending this this conference. They're, you know, an activist, a co-founder of the Airplane Poetry Movement.
And did you know that, well, you know this because you were there, but the other co-founder was Nandini Varma, who was also there in the audience at the conference, and is Shantanu's wife.
Yes,
and,
I met Nadine.
Yeah, I had some great chats with her.
She was amazing. Yeah. But had the opportunity. This was on the last day of the conference. I think it was just as we were leaving, I was able to corner Shantanu and have a little bit of a conversation with him about his work. His talk, as I mentioned earlier, was really fascinating because it presented sort of what slam and spoken word is in mm-hmm. India and how massively popular that, you know, these poetry events are, and just how many people. It's literally like stadiums that they can fill, or mm-hmm. huge, huge halls with storytelling and a performance of different kinds.
I'm Shantanu Anand, a self-proclaimed poet. And I also work on poetry events.
And where are you? Where have you come here to Vienna from?
I have come to Vienna from India, Mumbai specifically.
Okay, and what brought you to the Poetry Off the Page conference?
I was very lucky to be invited by the University of Vienna Poetry of the Page team to deliver the keynote address on day one of the conference.
And can you say a few words about the thought that went into what you would say in a keynote address to this particular audience?
I must admit, my first reaction when I received the invitation was like, why me? And the thought process was that there are beautiful poetic traditions in India that maybe the rest of the world has not been exposed to yet. And I feel there is space to borrow from those traditions, just as poetry does borrow it from cultures all the time. Poetry in India is about noise, it's about people, it's about resistance, and there is so much passion for the art form. And what I want is I want people to know that poetry can be associated with noise, it can be associated with crowds, and it can be delivered for the people by the people.
Yeah. You showed us some examples of poetry readings or performances, and I was just astounded. I told you this yesterday about the number of people who would show up. I mean, typically in Montreal at a poetry reading, you'd be lucky if you get like, well, anyone, or maybe 10 people or 30 people is a really good showing. But you showed us examples of, you know, maybe 10,000 people showing up at a poetry reading. Can you just explain that to our listeners in Canada, how that can even happen?
Well, there's a tradition of people gathering around poetry that has existed since the 15th century. Now, poetry is also seen as entertainment. So there would be poetry shows on televisions from the 1950s onwards. Mm. Now the poet's responsibility is to their audience. So they do not treat this as a serious reading where they are removed from their audience. They see it as their duty to entertain the audience. Similarly, the audience treats it as their duty to engage with the poet on stage. It is their job to laugh and hoot and clap when required. What this creates then is that effect of snowball. People come to where other people are. And that's the crux of why you will see 100 to 10,000 people at a poetry show in India.
Fantastic. Would you mind telling us a little bit about what we're going to hear?
You got to play Star Children. That's, that's a poem I've written called Star Children. I wrote it in 2014, and it is the poem that is closest to my heart. I would love for you to hear it.
So here is Shantanu Anand performing Star Children.
This is the story of a group of children who were told by their teacher on the 45th day of the war that if they drew a star on the pavement, it would help save someone's life. On that day, a boy in class had just found out that his father had been injured in a civilian bombing. The man had been sitting in his car when a shell burst in through the window and lodged itself into his chest. He was now fighting for his life. The boy in question, his name was Sarlinath, and the other kids used to make fun of him for that, as kids tend to do, behind his back, but on that day they didn't. Because they understood what he was going through, and they felt what he felt, and the whole class was feeling down, so the teacher, just to make them feel a little bit better, told them that if they drew a star on the pavement, it would help save someone's life. Draw a star for your mother, she said. Draw a star for your father. And a kid sitting in the back of the class asked, what if I want to save my uncle too? What if I want to save my neighbor's father too? Can I draw 4 stars? Can I draw 5? And the teacher said, well, you can draw as many as you'd like. So that day, while leaving class, the teacher left 3 big pieces of chalk on the classroom table. And the next day, when she entered the school, she saw the pavement outside the gate covered almost 25 meters each way in little stars, in pink, blue, and yellow. And the other kids saw this too, and they wanted to know what this was all about, and when they found out, they stole little pieces of chalk from their classrooms too, so that on the third day, when the teacher entered, she saw the pavement outside covered in all 3 directions surrounding the school in little stars. But the kids didn't stop there. No. They took little piece of chalk home with them, and where there were no pavements, they drew stars on signboards, and stars on park benches, and stars on the barks of crooked trees, and the neighbor's kids saw this too. And they wanted to know what this was all about, and when they found out, they stole little pieces of chalk from their schools too, so that it came to a point where you could not go to a single place in the city without seeing at least one star in a corner somewhere. A month after that first day, it rained. It rained and it rained all night long. And the next day, when the kids went down to board their school buses, they saw the streets and the pavements covered in chalk dust, congealed and dirty, layering the pavements like icing on a cake. And the kids began to cry because they knew now that the stars were gone, no one could be saved. But the mothers came down and the fathers came down with their mops and their brooms. And on that day, no one got to office before 12 noon because everyone was busy cleaning up the streets so that the kids could start again, and they did. So that it came to a point 1 month after that where the streets were crowded and traffic was slow because everyone walked on the streets now. No one walked on the footpaths anymore. And everyone carried a little piece of chalk in their front pocket. So that any time, every once in a while, if they had to hop onto the pavement just to save their life from a speeding car that was passing by, they would stoop down and make every single star perfect again. When the war ended, there were stars everywhere. There were stars on billboards and stars at bus stops and stars on the dust caves that had been formed on the roads by bombs. There were stars on hospital walls and stars over each and every patient's bed, and stars in pink, blue, and yellow on the streets, which once had been stained by the blood of the dead. And thousands of years later, after thousands of apocalypse predictions and thousands of spoken word festivals and thousands of celebrity remarriages, when the world finally did come to an end, the last group of survivors who stood huddled together among the burning buildings and collapsing roads swore that they saw through blood-filled and tear-stained eyes the ghosts of a group of children running around everywhere, coming up to each and every one of them and drawing stars on their chests. Thank you.
Is there anything else you would want to say to an audience in Canada?
Don't give up on spoken word poetry or slam poetry or performance poetry, whatever you call it. Remember that you're not doing it to be popular. You're not doing it to be, you know, to change the world. The reason you're doing it is to remind yourself that you have a voice, and that voice has value whether people assign value to it or not.
You've been listening to Sonic Lit, a spoken web radio show. My name is Catherine McLeod, and I've been here with Jason Camelot. And we've been listening to voices from Poetry Off the Page Around the Globe, Advances in Poetry Performance Research, a conference that was held in Vienna this year in June 2025. We listened to a combination of interviews recorded at the conference by us and recordings made by the poets themselves or recordings of the poets and researchers that we talked with. You heard the voices of
Chris Ortega, Liz Breslin, Kara Oh, and Shantanu Anand.
Thanks for listening.
Now in Vienna, there's 10 pretty women. There's a shoulder where death comes to cry. There's a lobby with 900 windows. There's a tree where the dogs go to die. There's a piece that was torn from the morning, and it hangs in the gallery of frost. Aye, 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 aye. Take this waltz, take this waltz, take this waltz with the clamp on its jaws. Oh, I want you, I want you, I want you. on a chair with a dead magazine. In the cave at the tip of the lily. In some hallway where love's never been. On our bed where the moon has been sweating. In a cry filled with footsteps and sand. I take this waltz, take this waltz. Take its broken waste in your hand. This waltz, this waltz, this waltz, this waltz, with its very own breath of brandy.